97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. I don't know where that came from. I guess the music did. Hey, this is Bo Matthews. That's Mark Cox. That's Carl Middleman. What's up, Carl?
Hey.
What's up?
We've got a full show here, but man, what a career Waino's had. You know, this is, I guess we could call this the great outdoors portion of the show, because when you go to a ball game at Busch Stadium, you're outdoors.
Absolutely.
And so we wanted to, you know, we wanted to shed a little light on this particular weekend, because one of our longtime heroes, Adam Wainwright,
Uncle Charlie,
he's hanging up his cleats, man. It's crazy.
Yeah. So happy for him. You know, we look falsely sometimes, we look up to these baseball heroes to be something other than what they really are, which is human beings. We kind of set them on a pedestal sometimes, and
sure,
then sometimes you get let down by them. Waino has never been one of those people. He's as down to earth as anybody you've ever met. I've seen him at my church before in the past. He had an injury one season, and he had a leg injury, and he was on a scooter, one of those knee scooters, and my son held the door open for him, and he stopped us and complimented us on what a gentleman our son was. And he's a hunter. He's just a great all around guy. And I think that everybody in St. Louis will always remember him rising to the occasion after what's been a miserable season of baseball for the Cardinals, and pulling out that win the other night, you know, number 200, where he pitched into the seventh inning, and he didn't have all the speed that he's had in the past, but he used his guile and his knowledge as a pitcher. Sometimes he was throwing 70 mile an hour off speed pitches and fooling these major league batters, and he did it, man. He shut down a great ball club to secure his 200th win of the season. And we'll always remember that.
That's fantastic. And I do want to give you, I think I can predict why he is doing this. He's hanging up the cleats. He might have announced this a long time ago, but I think after, because he's a musician, I think after he saw the success of Oliver Anthony, he thought, you know what? I think I can do that.
He's
give
gonna
me
have
my microphone, put me in the woods.
He's going to have to grow a beard, right?
He could do that.
He can grow about 6 inches too.
Yeah, with his music, we've played his national anthem on our morning show. Carl is not real happy about it, but we've played.
Neither are the listeners.
Well, I'm just saying he did that on opening day, and I'm sure we're going to hear him again in the future. We wanted to in honor of his last weekend as a Major League Baseball player, replay our interview with him last year, talking about his time in the woods as a deer hunter and a lot of other things, and a little bit about the Cardinals. Here that is. This is Adam Wainwright on this show about a year ago. Let's hit it. Well, you know why there's a baseball theme. We're going to talk to Adam Wainwright coming up here in just a couple of minutes from the St. Louis Cardinals, talking about his hunting success among his many other successes.
It's deer hunting season, and there's a lot of things going on in the world right now, and it seems like Adam Wainwright is playing whack-a-mole because he's been hunting successfully, unlike MARC,
yes,
which is the new term for the old Indian word for bad hunter.
Yes, that's me.
But you are going to try this weekend.
I am.
He's also been serving food. Let's start with your deer hunting story. Adam Wainwright, welcome to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Where were you? What happened? What'd you do? Is it an epic story? Are you going to mount the head?
It's definitely going to get mounted. Definitely. Big, mature, 7.5-year-old Illinois whitetail, just a real trophy, just a giant 8-pointer, biggest 8-pointer I've ever seen in person.
Wow!
I think we scored it 156 and 4/8. Pretty big 8-point.
Is this something you've been watching for years?
So I was invited up to my friend Jim Tilmey's house farm, and he's got one of the best places in the country. And when you get an invite like that, you got to go.
Yes,
and
you do.
So, you do. You just have to go. And. And this is how great this place is. I shot that deer and got it in the truck and got it back, and he looked at it and he said, "Man, that is the perfect management buck."
Wow.
You know, so that's how, you know, you just, that's the Midwest for you, though. You never know what's going to step out in front of you. It could be a little 3-year-old dink 8-pointer, or it could be a 195-inch 10. You never know. So yeah, that's what it's exciting, especially during the rut. You just never know.
Well, congratulations. The next question is, what did you get it with? Was it a curve or a fastball?
Definitely a fastball. Those Matthews bows are pretty special.
Yeah, he shot a bow with a bow.
Yeah, a Matthews bow. It's not my company, but thank you. So can you describe where you were, how long you were out there? Because Mark here was in the stand for 4 hours, and then he did really well on his poker app that he was playing.
Yeah, but no deer.
Well, that's hunting, isn't it? I mean, if it'd just be called harvesting if it was different. But, you know, I've hunted the last, at least 2 seasons, I think 3 seasons now, without a big mature Midwest buck. And so, you know, sometimes that's the way it goes. Sometimes you run into a few of them a year, and sometimes you don't. When you're like me, though, you have 5 kids. What I'm usually hunting is those 5 kids. I'm usually hunting them all over the place. So my time in the woods has been sparing at best. So I was very fortunate to be able to get one on the dirt.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Well, we're so thrilled to hear it. I think I saw a picture of it online, and it's impressive. I'm still hopeful. I'm going to go out this weekend and give it one more shot.
Literally.
Well, you're definitely not going to get one if you don't go.
That is a great point.
And I'm definitely not going to get one because I'm married to a vegetarian. But again, taking donations of venison because I am a carnivore. You know, if you don't mind switching gears here, I had a headline here that said you were serving food to the community at the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial. Could you describe what's going on with that?
Yeah, we had so our community is a very tight-knit community. I grew up, born and raised here in South Georgia, born in Brunswick, Georgia, where Ahmaud was shot, and there was some words said in the courtroom the other day that that caused Al Sharpton and a couple other leaders among the black community to say, "Hey, we need some more support down here." And 500, they said 500. They invited 500. I think we had way more than that. So it was just an opportunity for me to be the hands and feet of Jesus and get out there and serve people who are coming in with great intentions, who are coming in here and protesting peacefully, or coming in here just to make sure that the support is known. But one way or another, I wanted everyone to know, and our community to know, and our community wanted everyone to know that we were going to support and love anybody who came in here. So they had some people in there frying shrimp and boiling shrimp and frying fish and making some pulled pork barbecue, baked beans, coleslaw. We fed, I if there was one person there that was 750 at least. It was 2 hours of nonstop packed lines, and we fed them good, and they had a good time, and it was great to meet everyone and talk to them.
Well, good for you. I mean, I think that's fantastic. I'll have to tell you, Adam, 5, 6, 7 years ago, when you had a leg injury, I remember this specifically. We were at our church in the Chesterfield Valley, The Crossing, where I know Mike Matheny used to attend, and my son saw you there and held the door for you as you were leaving, and you thanked him, and that's been one of the highlights of his life. Can I just tell you that as a Cardinals fan, he still talks about seeing you at his church.
Well, I did appreciate him opening that door because I was a little hobbled at that time. And you never know. I might not have got out of there without him.
So. Yeah. Congratulations. Adam Wainwright, our guest. You know, Adam, congratulations as well on a fantastic season. I mean, what, 17 wins this year? Is that right?
Well, 17 wins in a row.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the team, 17 wins in a row. I was talking about him personally.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of those are true. it was a good season. We really got it going towards the end. And I honestly believe if we beat the Dodgers, which we should have, I mean, by all accounts, we probably should have won that game. We had 10 or 11 runners in scoring position, and their pitchers held the fort down really well. And that's the way baseball goes sometimes. But if we get past them, I feel really good that we're going to go deep into October and probably win the whole World Series. That's the way the team was clicking. And that's what our expectations are. More than I've felt in a long time coming into this next year because of the way we ended. the way that that feeling was flowing through the clubhouse, guys, a lot of guys felt for the first time like, oh man, we're going to win this. Like, we're going to really do it and believe it. And it's one thing to say it, and it's another thing to believe it. And I think guys were starting to believe it there at the end.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is awesome. And are you looking to working with Ollie as the new manager in the next year?
He's great. Yeah, I've become great friends with Ollie, and he has grown up in this game, played, you know, up to the professional ball with the Cardinals, and then he's been the good thing about, you know what, he's been in like pretty much every role as a coach or as a manager through right. the minor leagues and through the big leagues. He knows every side of it. He knows, you know, what players are thinking, because as a bench coach, you get a lot of guys coming to you. You're everyone's best friend because you're the guy that can make things happen, and you're the go-between. And when you're the kind of the first base coach like he was for a while, then guys can feel like they can kind of come to you and vent without, you know, that getting back to the manager. And then, you know, when you become the manager, which he's done in the minor leagues also, when you become the manager, some of those things, people may not have a great relationship with you, or maybe they don't feel comfortable doing because you're the one making the lineup card out. But he has a lot of really great relationships already from being in there. The continuity is great, and I think he's going to do a fantastic job.
Well, I tell you what, Adam Wainwright's been an honor talking to you. Congratulations on your hunting success and your baseball success. We appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you. I just got done playing a little music on the church stage here. I'm going to go back inside and see if I can't wrangle some more songs up.
Keep spreading that word.
All right, see you guys.
All right, Adam Wainwright, outstanding.
And, of course, that was our conversation with Adam Wainwright last year, and here we are headed into the final game of his baseball career this weekend, of course, and it's going to be a sad day for a lot of St. Louisans, but celebrating a great accomplishment with 200 victories. I'm so glad he got that. He's not going to pitch again, but might get to bat, so we're very excited about that. I'm planning on being there, Bo Matthews.
Oh, man, you got tickets? What's up with that?
I know.
This is the great outdoors portion of the program. But, you know, Waino is a great friend of this. He's a fan of the Second Amendment and supports it. He's been on the show a couple of different times over the years. And I think we should encourage him, you know, in his off time, being retired, he's got all this time in the world, to be on the show a little bit more. How about that?
Maybe we can get him back because, of course, he's going to have an album to promote, right?
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Country music album. We can play a few of his songs and talk to him about that as well.
Just not the national anthem.
And I'm sure he'll continue with his foundation helping people
Big League out. Impact.
Yes, that's great. Anyway, we thought you'd enjoy listening to Adam again heading into the final Big League game of his career this weekend and wrapping it all up and staying with the Cardinals for the entire career. You just don't get that anymore. Just doesn't happen.
He gave it all.
Yeah.
He left it all on the stage,
yes,
as they say.
Yes, he did. Hey, all right, coming up, here's something else you can do this weekend. If you love firearms, which I do, and you love collecting antique firearms, which I do, for sure, they're having a big gun show down in Arnold. We're going to talk to Tom Knox, one of the people who puts this on each year, with all the details coming up on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Welcome back. And, you know, I love nothing better than a good gun show, Bo Matthews. How about you?
Man, I haven't been to a gun show in a long time, but, man, I always have so much fun. I learn a lot, too.
We need to correct that because I've been down to the Missouri Arms Collectors gun show. They're going to do it again at the weekend of the 29th, this weekend, in fact, at the Arnold's Eagles Hall. And we've got Tom Knox on the phone this morning to talk more about that. And, Tom, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I loved what you guys did down there the last time I paid a visit. It might have been 2 years ago, in fact. But fantastic. Tell people what they can expect this weekend.
Well, basically, Missouri Arms Collectors Association is the only locally run gun show in the city. Everything else has gone to out-of-town promoters. And they cater more to the new types of firearms, whereas we cater to the collectors. and that's what our main emphasis is.
I do love a gun show like that because you're right. I was at one at the High Ridge Fire Department many years ago. Maybe you guys were involved with that. I don't know, but the World War One and World War Two firearms that they had on display, the guys dressed in the uniforms of the era was so cool, Tom. And this is the 95th gun show that you guys are putting on. You weren't at the first annual, were you?
Yes, I was. I have been at all of them from the very first one. So they're always interesting, and there's always unique items to see.
Yeah, tell us, just maybe pick out a few of those. I know it struck me that, I mean, there were a lot of older rifles and handguns and collector's items that you had the last time I was down there. Can you think of a few good examples of those you've seen last year or maybe what you're expecting this year?
Well, we never know what to expect, to be honest with you, but one of our board members always has several tables of antique Colt firearms dating back to the Civil War. Another has a large variety of unique and unusual European arms. There are several collectors of U.S. military firearms dating from World War II and earlier. So it's always a surprise, even to me, what might pop up.
Yeah, I'll bet. I as much as anything, when I was down there, what struck me about it was the knowledge of the folks that you gather for your gun show. I mean, if you've got an old weapon at home or maybe something you inherited from your grandpa or it's been in your family a long time and you just don't know that much about it, the amount of knowledge that is available at your Arms Collectors Association is pretty amazing.
It is. There are specialists in almost every field there, and they are more than happy to share their knowledge with anybody who might want to bring something in. That's what we try to promote more than anything else.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I know I went down and had a lot of questions about, I think, a British Enfield rifle that I had at one point.
Ah, yes. Yeah, very, very popular firearms in the collecting fraternity. Probably the biggest collectibles in now and for a long time have been U.S. military arms, although they've spiked and became even more popular after Band of Brothers and Saving Private Ryan. World War II German firearms are always and have always been collectible. There are a good portion of collectors of Japanese weapons, and just about everything else. I mean, there's gentlemen who collect all types of Mauser rifles because the Mauser rifles were used all over the world for 200 years, and virtually every country used them. So there's a never-ending supply of different and unusual variations.
Hey, Tom, are there a lot of sales over this weekend, or is it more just a museum for people to walk through?
Well, the items, in most cases, the items are for sale, are for trade. So there will be, and there will be some newer firearms there. I mean, we do have members and table holders that deal in the more modern stuff, but it is a smaller percentage than at any other show in the area.
Yeah, very true. What's your personal preference, Tom? Do you collect a certain type? Have you filled up your cabinet? You don't buy anymore? What's your take on it?
I think I'll continue buying them until they throw dirt in my face. My particular field of interest is French military firearms dating from World War II going all the way back.
Oh, nice. Just because they're not used very much?
Yeah, that's why I hear that a lot. They're dropped once, you know. I always hear that.
Yeah, just kidding. I couldn't help myself. I bought an M1 Garand probably 12, 13 years ago, and that is my pride and joy. I still take it deer hunting.
Wow.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the most popular U.S. military firearms because so many fellas trained with them, even going into Vietnam before they got the M14s, the later rifle that most of the older fellows did train with them, and so there's a soft spot in their heart. I have fellows that come in here that still remember the serial number of the gun that they carried.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, you spend a lot of time with something like that. You do remember those kind of things. You know, as we're approaching, sunk right in the middle of the 95th annual gun show with the Missouri Arms Collections Association. Tell us about some of the deals you got for admission. It's $9 general admission, but you do have free admission for some folks.
I believe anyone in law enforcement or firemen, they get in on their badge. Children under the age, I believe, of 12 don't pay anything.
That's true.
So yeah. that's what our rules are on in that case.
Yeah. Well, hopefully people will show up, and I know there's just such a great selection. Even if you got a passing interest in it, just to go in, it's almost like, I wouldn't say walking through a museum, but there are a lot of museum pieces in there that are in many cases available for sale, and I just love to go in and browse as much as anything.
Well, yeah. I'm the same way because I see things. I've been doing this since I was 12, 13 years old, and I'm 78 now, and I still see things every day, either here at the shop or at the show that I've never seen before.
Yeah, true. Yeah. So, Tom, I know that you guys bring this to Arnold every year. Where else do you go? Do you go all across the state?
No, we just have the two shows locally. That's all we've ever had.
Wow. Well, listen, again, I'll tell people, 1725 Jeffco Boulevard, easy to find, the Eagles Hall down in Arnold, taking place all this weekend, and I would encourage people to go down there and check things out at MissouriArmsCollectorsAssociation.com, MissouriArmsCollectorsAssociation.com. Tom Knox, thank you for joining us.
You're more than welcome.
Yep, we appreciate that, and best of luck this weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself. We appreciate that. Yeah, I don't know, Bo.
Cool.
I love going to regular gun shows, but I particularly love going to the ones where they have a lot of antique weapons. You can find some of those at just regular gun shows. People show up with their tables. Some of the collectors have the old, you know, muskets and Civil War style weapons. Now, prices are going up on those. There's no doubt because it's just such a scarcity.
And they're few and far between. When you go to a regular, let's call it a regular gun show, as opposed to this one, you get one or two or three. You get a few people that are showing off the really old stuff.
Yeah,
I went to an antiques show in Belleville about a month ago, and it was an antique show. But it was all like, you know, what's that antique show on PBS?
Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, that. And there was a gun dealer there. He also had knives, and all of his guns were like pre-1900. Oh, and yeah. I mean, just to look at that dinosaur style weaponry was high tech at that time. It was just baffling where they store stuff in the butt of the gun, and they've got the flints and they've got the balls. Uh-huh. It's crazy. I mean, but again, back in that day, that was high tech, baby.
Absolutely, it was. Well, hopefully, people can check out the Missouri Arms Collectors Association this weekend. Coming up, I of course do a daily talk show here at 97.1 FM Talk.
You do?
I do. For people that aren't aware of that, and
what?
The big story in the news this week was Joe Biden announcing a new office in the White House and a new czar, a gun violence prevention office headed by Czar Harris. That would be Kamala Harris. We're going to talk to our friends from the Gun Owners of America about that and what it's all about when we come back on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Alongside Mark Cox, I'm Bo Matthews. Carl Middleman, our executive producer of this program.
Pew, pew.
And this segment is brought to you by That right there. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory in De Pere. They are a gun concierge. The knowledge base and the selection and the customization and the suppressors, they've got the best selection. Check them out and get into the store. Go introduce yourself. You're going to be a great fan of Razorback Armory. Go to RazorbackArmory.com for details. Tell them Bo sent you in.
After every mass shooting, we hear a simple message. The same message all over the country. And I've been to every mass shooting. Do something. Please do something. Do something to prevent the tragedies that leave behind survivors who will always carry the physical and emotional scars. Families will never quite be the same. Communities overwhelmed by grief and trauma. Do something.
His writers can't even keep up with their own lies. Can they? They'll tell you there have been 800 mass shootings in America. And Joe Biden just looked into a TV camera and said, I've been to every single mass shooting, which just proves to you that there haven't been 800 of them. It's just silly season in America. We've got Aiden Johnston with us, of course, a St. Louis native, director of federal affairs for Gun Owners of America. Aiden, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, doesn't it get a little tiring? The constant messaging from this White House made up of complete lies and fabrications and blowing things out of proportion, all to announce that he's going to take action by creating a new bureaucracy called the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention.
It's just what we've come to expect, unfortunately, from this administration. Whenever you hear something about firearms, a statistic, whatever, it's usually false in one way or another. They've messed with things to make it seem like guns are the problem. And that's because they treat firearms, inanimate objects, like they're the cause of violence, which is, you know, done by people. So now they have this office, we're just calling it the Office of Gun Control, because that's what it is. And they have these staff now, they hired some gun control lobbyists, and they're basically going to spend 24/7 thinking up ways to misuse executive authority to infringe on your Second Amendment rights.
I think the most comforting part of this whole gun violence prevention or gun control office is that it's going to be led by Kamala Harris, which, as the guns are, she's done really good at the southern border for us. So honestly, I don't think we got a lot to worry about, although this is red meat for them and they're going to be chomping down. Do you agree?
You know, if they were smart, they would have put someone intelligent in charge of this office to actually think of new ways to harass gun owners. I don't think Kamala Harris has had an original idea like that in a long time. So we should be good. But the fact that they hired gun control lobbyists to work and staff the office, that seems like more of a problem to me than, you know, Kamala Harris being in charge. We're really concerned that they're going to use this office. Biden compared it to being like FEMA. We're concerned that they're going to declare some sort of emergency or misuse emergency powers, just like the governor of New Mexico just did to suspend open and concealed carry. That's, I think, one of the biggest concerns with the creation of this office. If anyone's going to mastermind something like that, it's going to be these people.
Yeah, you know, I don't want you to overlook the fact that Kamala Harris uses Venn diagrams to solve problems. She loves Venn diagrams, and whenever she draws them, she finds out that wherever they intersect, the words in the middle are ban guns. And that's exactly what Biden was talking about again this week. Carl, if we can go to that other soundbite with the president, please.
It's time again to ban assault weapons, high capacity magazines. If you need 80 shots in a magazine, you shouldn't own a gun.
The stupidity is so rich, it's almost not fair, Aiden.
You know, of course, what he just proposed is unconstitutional, but what I also love about that statement is he endorsed a ban, federal ban on so-called large capacity magazines the day after, or rather hours after, the bill sponsor, Senator Menendez, was indicted on federal bribery charges. The senator who supports an assault or magazine capacity limit at the federal level took cash and gold bar bribes from Egypt and other foreign dignitaries, and we're supposed to go with this guy who wants to infringe on your Second Amendment, who's taking bribes from foreign countries. It just blows my mind that the president has no idea what the Second Amendment means or what it stands for. He doesn't respect your rights, and you know, we're just not going to listen to him. We're going to fight him every inch.
on the streets of major cities and medium-sized cities across this country. It's frightening to see the headlines usually on Monday morning about what happened over the weekend. Chicago, St. Louis, New York, L.A., wherever it is. And the real thing is that law enforcement, although they have been, demoralized, if anything, if they just enforced the laws that they have, it would help so much. But when you look at a gun violence prevention office led by Kamala Harris, it really says we are coming after the legal, law-abiding gun owners. And that's the frightening part everybody should have their ears open to.
Right. Biden wants to enforce the gun control laws that we already have that we probably should be repealing, when instead we should be enforcing the actual criminal penalties that we have for violent criminals. We let people commit horrible, violent crimes and then release them out on bail the next day or hours later. It is unconscionable. But the Democratic Party, led by President Biden, they're not doing anything about that. And instead, they want to go and they want to blame you and your firearms and your 80-round magazine, wherever you can buy one of those, and and as if that is the cause of violence, that inanimate object that Biden thinks you own.
Hey, everybody. So I have some big news to share. We are announcing the creation of the first ever White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. And we are doing this work in large part because of the activism, the organizing, the marching, the voting of all of you leaders, be it students, parents, teachers, community leaders, who understand that living free from gun violence should be a right.
How about living free from ignorance? Can that be can that be something we can have a house to a committee to prevent? I don't know, Aiden. Every time I listen to her, the insincerity bleeds through. Here's what the would be the major four functions of this group: implementing their bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which hasn't, to my knowledge, made any community safer yet; implementing his executive actions on gun control, many of which are going to be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court; coordinating more support for victims in the way FEMA responds to natural disasters, which you referred to there earlier; and working with state and local partners to pass more state laws, like they did in California this week, where Gavin Newsom announced he was putting an 11% excise tax on weapons. And he called it. He just flat out called it a sin tax on something you have a constitutional guarantee to own.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans unfortunately sort of handed the president a lot of this, that bipartisan Safer Communities Act. That's all thanks to Senator John Cornyn and Senator Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the Senate who passed this unconstitutional gun control that's been weaponized against gun owners countless times. You know, case in point being this Office of Gun Violence Prevention that their number one goal is to enforce that. And Biden's executive orders have flowed from law changes to the law that came from the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. But like I said, that FEMA comparison, I think, is really, really concerning, because in New Mexico just a couple of weeks ago, the governor used a public health emergency to say no one can carry a firearm in the entire city of Albuquerque, not if you have a concealed carry license, not if you want a lawfully open carry. And now, I don't think that the president has that authority to ban carry nationwide or something like that. Who knows what kind of ways these people are going to try to abuse emergency power? We've seen public health emergency power abused just in recent years. So that is extremely, extremely concerning to us. And we have a bill that GOA supports in Congress to prevent the White House or the Secretary of Health and Human Services from declaring an emergency to impose gun control. And Democrats voted it down in committee about a month ago.
Wow. You know, number three on the list of things that this office is going to supposedly do that you listed off, Mark, was coordinating more support for victims after shootings. Yeah. To me, that sounds like the student loan forgiveness program, or the money that they're going to put out for the folks in Hawaii that were devastated by the fires, which he can relate to. To me, this is just nothing more than throwing money to possibly buy votes. You know, you have, you know, let's say a family's, you know, suffered a loss of somebody in an inner city shooting. Well, what's that going to be? Is that a paycheck? Is that, are they just going to get a check? Is that the support they're talking about? Or are they talking about emotional support that they can help with their community? I don't know what it is.
I don't either. And it, you know, at this point, they're going to take money away from law enforcement in big cities across the country, including right here in St. Louis, and redirect it to help victims after the crimes happen, instead of prosecuting, using the money to have policing and prosecuting the criminals to prevent it from ever happening again. It's a screwed up set of priorities, Aiden.
Yeah, I mean, what's the best way you can help a community before or after an incident like this is preventing it from ever happening in the future or again. And for say it's a school shooting, the best way to stop that is to arm really teachers. It's to give people the tools to defend themselves and to protect themselves. And that's not what the president is talking about giving to victims or communities here. He's still talking about imposing all the same gun controls and taking away their right to defend themselves. And that's just not going to help anyone.
Well, I know gun owners, you guys are doing your part fighting these efforts across the country. You went to bat in New Mexico, clearly. And I mean, are any of his executive actions on guns still being challenged in court? Do you know?
Yeah, so we're still fighting against the Biden pistol brace ban. That's ongoing litigation. It's the federal government is restrained from enforcing that ban and confiscating any of our members' firearms, but we were not able to secure a nationwide injunction for non-GOA members just yet. And we're also still fighting the ATF rule on so-called ghost guns, where they actually regulated the sale of gun parts and also made 4473s, the form that you fill out when you buy a gun, into permanent gun registration records. So we're still fighting both of those. And the White House also announced a backdoor universal background check rule. And we're going to be filing a lawsuit to that as soon as it's finally implemented.
Well, you know, the subject, we talk about mass shootings, school shootings, God forbid those things happening. But Missouri is definitely, you know, moved. In March, they put out the HB 70 that required school faculty and staff who want to participate to get a concealed carry permit and be approved and designated by the school district or the school board to carry a gun on school property. There's a few places in the state of Missouri that's doing that. It needs to be across the country, and other states may be doing it, but we're only concerned here in the Midwest at this point. But I think that's a good plan, because the good guys, the cops with guns, can't be everywhere. And when something is happening, and people are probably thinking you're crazy putting a gun in a teacher's hand, you know what? When it's happening, you want a good person with a gun. I said a gender fluid, good guy, good, you know, good guy, good girl with a gun,
a gun person.
It's Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Alongside Mark Cox, I'm Bo Matthews. Carl Middleman, our executive producer of this program.
Pew, pew.
And this segment is brought to you by that right there. This segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory in De Pere. They are a gun concierge. The knowledge base and the selection and the customization and the suppressors, they've got the best selection. Check them out and get into the store. Go introduce yourself. You're going to be a great fan of Razorback Armory. Go to RazorbackArmory.com for details. Tell them Bo sent you in.
After every mass shooting, we hear a simple message. The same message heard all over the country. And I've been to every mass shooting. Do something. Please do something. Do something to prevent the tragedies that leave behind survivors who will always carry the physical and emotional scars. Families will never quite be the same. Communities overwhelmed by grief and trauma. Do something.
His writers can't even keep up with their own lies, can they? They'll tell you there have been 800 mass shootings in America, and Joe Biden just looked into a TV camera and said, I've been to every single mass shooting, which just proves to you that there haven't been 800 of them. It's just silly season in America. We've got Aiden Johnston with us, of course, a St. Louis native, Director of Federal Affairs for Gun Owners of America. Aiden, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, doesn't it get a little tiring, the constant messaging from this White House made up of complete lies and fabrications and blowing things out of proportion, all to announce that he's going to take action by creating a new bureaucracy called the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention.
It's just what we've come to expect, unfortunately, from this administration. Whenever you hear something about firearms, a statistic, whatever, it's usually false in one way or another. They've messed with things to make it seem like guns are the problem. And that's because they treat firearms, inanimate objects, like they're the cause of violence, which is, you know, done by people. So now they have this office, you know, we're just calling it the Office of Gun Control because that's what it is. And they're going to, they have these staff now. They hired some gun control lobbyists, and they're basically going to spend 24/7 thinking up ways to misuse executive authority to infringe on your Second Amendment rights.
I think the most comforting part of this whole gun violence prevention or gun control office is that it's going to be led by Kamala Harris, which, you know, as the guns are, she's done really good at the southern border for us. So honestly, I don't think we've got a lot to worry about, although this is red meat for them and they're going to be chomping down. Do you agree?
You know, if they were smart, they would have put someone intelligent in charge of this office to actually think of new ways to harass gun owners. I don't think Kamala Harris has had an original idea like that in a long time. So we should be good. But the fact that they hired gun control lobbyists to work and staff the office, that seems like more of a problem to me than, you know, Kamala Harris being in charge. We're really concerned that they're going to use this office. Biden compared it to being like FEMA. We're concerned that they're going to declare some sort of emergency or misuse emergency powers, just like the governor of New Mexico just did to suspend open and concealed carry. That's, I think, one of the biggest concerns with the creation of this office. If anyone's going to mastermind something like that, it's going to be these people.
Yeah, you know, I don't want you to overlook the fact that Kamala Harris uses Venn diagrams to solve problems. She loves Venn diagrams, and whenever she draws them, she finds out that wherever they intersect, the words in the middle are ban guns. And that's exactly what Biden was talking about again this week. Carl, if we can go to that other soundbite with the president, please.
It's time again to ban assault weapons, high capacity magazines. If you need 80 shots in a magazine, you shouldn't own a gun.
The stupidity is so rich, I it's almost not fair, Aiden.
You know, of course, what he just proposed is unconstitutional, but what I also love about that statement is he endorsed a ban, federal ban on so-called large capacity magazines the day after, or rather hours after the bill sponsor, Senator Menendez, was indicted on federal bribery charges. The senator who supports an assault or magazine capacity limit at the federal level, you took cash and gold bar bribes from Egypt and other foreign dignitaries, and we're supposed to go with this guy who wants to infringe on your Second Amendment, who's taken bribes from foreign countries. It just blows my mind that the president has no idea what the Second Amendment means or what it stands for. He doesn't respect your rights, and you know, we're just not going to listen to him. We're going to fight him every inch.
On the streets of major cities and you know, medium-sized cities across this country, it's frightening to see the headlines usually on Monday morning about what happened over the weekend. Chicago, St. Louis, New York, L.A., wherever it is. And the real thing is that law enforcement, although they have been, you know, demoralized, if anything, if they just enforced the laws that they have, it would help so much. But when you look at a gun violence prevention office led by Kamala Harris, it really says we are coming after the legal, law-abiding gun owners, and that's the frightening part everybody should have their ears open to.
Right. Biden wants to enforce the gun control laws that we already have that we probably should be repealing, when instead we should be enforcing the actual criminal penalties that we have for violent criminals. We let people commit horrible, violent crimes and then release them out on bail the next day or hours later. It is unconscionable, but the Democratic Party, led by President Biden, they're not doing anything about that. And instead, they want to go and they want to blame you and your firearms and your 80-round magazine, wherever you can buy one of those, and as if that is the cause of violence, that inanimate object that Biden thinks you own.
Hey, everybody. So I have some big news to share. We are announcing the creation of the first ever White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention. And we are doing this work in large part because of the activism, the organizing, the marching, the voting of all of you leaders, be it students, parents, teachers, community leaders, who understand that living free from gun violence should be a right.
How about living free from ignorance? Can that be can that be something we can have a house to a committee to prevent? I don't know, Aiden. I listen, every time I listen to her, the insincerity bleeds through. Here's what the would be the major four functions of this org, of this group: implementing their bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which hasn't, to my knowledge, made any community safer yet; implementing his executive actions on gun control, many of which are going to be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court; coordinating more support for victims in the way FEMA responds to natural disasters, which you referred to there earlier; and working with state and local partners to pass more state laws, like they did in California this week, where Gavin Newsom announced he was putting an 11% excise tax on weapons. And he called it, he just flat out called it a sin tax on something you have a constitutional guarantee to own.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans unfortunately sort of handed the president a lot of this, that bipartisan Safer Communities Act. That's all thanks to Senator John Cornyn and Senator Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the Senate who passed this unconstitutional gun control that's been weaponized against gun owners countless times. You know, case in point being this Office of Gun Violence Prevention that their number one goal is to be to enforce that. And Biden's executive orders have flowed from law changes to the law that came from the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. But like I said, that FEMA comparison, I think, is really, really concerning, because in New Mexico just a couple of weeks ago, the governor used a public health emergency to say no one can carry a firearm in the entire city of Albuquerque, not if you have a concealed carry license, not if you want a lawfully open carry. And now, I don't think that the president has that authority to you know, ban carry nationwide or something like that. Who knows what kind of ways these people are going to try to abuse emergency power. We've seen public health emergency power abuse just in recent years. So that is extremely, extremely concerning to us. And we have a bill that GOA supports in Congress to prevent the White House or the Secretary of Health and Human Services from declaring an emergency to impose gun control. And Democrats voted it down in committee about a month ago.
Wow. You know, number three on the list of things that this office is going to supposedly do that you listed off, Mark, was coordinating more support for victims after shootings. Yeah. To me, that sounds like the student loan forgiveness program, or the money that they're going to put out for the folks in Hawaii that were devastated by the fires, which he can relate to. To me, this is just nothing more than throwing money to possibly buy votes. You know, you have, you know, let's say a family's, suffered a loss of somebody in an inner city shooting. Well, what's that going to be? Is that a paycheck? Are they just going to get a check? Is that the support they're talking about? Or are they talking about emotional support that they can help with their community? I don't know what it is.
I don't either. And at this point, they're going to take money away from law enforcement in big cities across the country, including right here in St. Louis, and redirect it to help victims after the crimes happen, instead of prosecuting, using the money to have policing and prosecuting the criminals to prevent it from ever happening again. It's a screwed up set of priorities, Aiden.
Yeah, I mean, what's the best way you can help a community before or after an incident like this is preventing it from ever happening in the future or again. And for say it's a school shooting, the best way to stop that is to arm willing teachers. It's to give people the tools to defend themselves and to protect themselves. And that's not what the president is talking about giving to victims or communities here. He's still talking about imposing all the same gun controls and taking away their right to defend themselves. And that's just not going to help anyone.
Well, I know gun owners, you guys are doing your part fighting these efforts across the country. You went to bat in New Mexico, clearly. And I mean, are any of his executive actions on guns still being challenged in court? Do you know?
Yeah, so we're still fighting against the Biden pistol brace ban. That's ongoing litigation. It's the federal government is restrained from enforcing that ban and confiscating any of our members' firearms, but we were not able to secure a nationwide injunction for non-GOA members just yet. And we're also still fighting the ATF rule on so-called ghost guns, where they actually regulated the sale of gun parts and also made 4473s, the form that you fill out when you buy a gun, into permanent gun registration records. So we're still fighting both of those. And the White House also announced a backdoor universal background check rule. And we're going to be filing a lawsuit to that as soon as it's finally implemented.
Well, you know, the subject, we talk about mass shootings, school shootings, God forbid those things happening, but Missouri is definitely, you know, moved. In March, they put out the HB 70 that required school faculty and staff who want to participate to get a concealed carry permit and be approved and designated by the school district or the school board to carry a gun on school property. There's a few places in the state of Missouri that's doing that. It needs to be across the country, and other states may be doing it, but we're only concerned here in the Midwest at this point. But I think that's a good plan, because the good guys, the cops with guns, can't be everywhere. And when something is happening, and people are probably thinking you're crazy putting a gun in a teacher's hand, you know what? When it's happening, you want a good person with a gun. I said a gender fluid. Good guy, good girl with a gun.
A gun person. It's like a birthing person, a gunning. You want a gunning person to be there.
I do. And I'm for that, because if schools are truly targets, you definitely want protection where it's happening and when it's happening. My opinion.
Yeah, you know, there's never been a school shooting at a school that had armed teachers. So this is absolutely a great first step for Missouri and for teachers. I think that no matter where you work, whatever school district you work, even if there are anti-gunners that run the school board, that the teacher's right to carry a firearm doesn't stop when they go to work. Yes. So I think it should be across all of the schools. And I don't think that, you know, that restriction is constitutional, but I'm glad that some schools are going to be protected. I think that that will serve as plenty of deterrence. We've seen these mass shooters, they go and they case up their targets and they see what kind of security measures they have, and they just do not target gun-free zones. 90%+ of mass public shootings take place in those gun-free zones, and that would mean also for a school that doesn't have armed teachers.
Well, it's a great point. Aiden Johnson, always great having you on. Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org is the website to find out more about the great work they do, to sign up for email alerts, to become a member and help them in their ongoing fight to protect your Second Amendment rights. Aiden, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep, we will talk again soon.
Sounds good.
Absolutely. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for
appreciate
being our
that.
Expert.
And good
talking to that guy.
You kind of get a 30,000 foot view, because Aiden is looking at what's going on all across the country and not just here in the Midwest.
Right. And I didn't mean to put the spotlight just on Missouri, but I mean, that's what I understand best.
Our friends in Illinois, understand.
there are a bunch of school districts that do allow teachers and faculty to have concealed carry, and I just think it's smart in the day and age that we live in, Mark, don't you think?
It's common sense, and this is Common Sense Radio. All right, that does it for this edition of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. We'll see you next weekend.
See you, boys!
Get more at 971talk.com.